Dharma. Dharma. The personality of religious principles.
The personality of religious principles.
Pada.
Pada.
Leg.
Leg.
Ikena.
Ikena.
On one only.
On one only.
Chara.
Chara.
Wandering.
Wandering.
Vichayam.
Vichayam.
Overtaken by the shadow of grief.
Upalabhya,
having met,
Gam,
the cow, Prichati,
asking,
Sma,
with,
Asruvadanam,
with tears on the face,
Vivatsa, one who has lost her offspring,
Eva,
like,
Mataram,
the mother. Translation. The personality of religious principles, Dharma, was wandering about in the form of a bull, and he met the personality of earth in the form of a cow, who appeared to grieve like a mother who had lost her child. She had tears in her eyes, and the beauty of her body was lost. Thus Dharma questioned the earth as follows. Purport. The bull is the emblem of the moral principle, and the cow is the representative of the earth. When the bull and the cow are in a joyful mood, it is to be understood that the people of the world are also in a joyful mood. The reason is that the bull helps production of grains in the agricultural field, and the cow delivers milk, the miracle of the aggregate food values. The human society, therefore, maintains these two important animals very carefully so that they can wander everywhere in cheerfulness. But at the present moment, in this age of Kali, both the bull and the cow are now being slaughtered and eaten up as foodstuff by a class of men who do not know the Brahminical culture. The bull and cow can be protected for the good of all human society simply by spreading of Brahminical culture as the topmost perfection of all cultural affairs. By advancement of such culture, the morale of society and people maintained is the morale of society is properly maintained, and so peace and prosperity are also attained without extraneous effort. When Brahminical culture deteriorates, the cow and bull are mistreated, and the resultant actions are prominent by the following symptoms. There are various ancient prayers which have been sung by since time immemorial. Like it is stated that the demigods are chanting the Purusha Sukta, and Brahmanas are chanting the Gayatri Mantra, and are establishing a culture based on scripture. It is said that that Gayatri Mantra is standing on four legs. I read it in a commentary of Baladeva Vijayabhusan on the Vedanta Sutra, and he's explaining Gayatri is standing on four legs, which is interesting. And he says one leg is mind, one leg is body, one leg is words. So those are the three legs. But the fourth leg is the earth. So the earth, the conditions of earth are very essential to spiritual life. We need to create a sattvic condition on earth as a foundation of our spiritual life. We see in the line of disciplic succession of Gopal Guru Goswami, who was under the instruction of Sarup Damodar Goswami, so in that way coming the secretary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the disciple of Gopal Guru Goswami is Janachandra Goswami, and he wrote a book which is I think it's something like the Gora Archana Padati. And in that book he is beginning worship, and he is aiming to worship the Supreme Lord. But before he does so, he offers obeisances to the earth. He offers obeisances to everything that has provided him. So he's very conscious in his worship to also include the earth. Here the earth is depicted as a cow. A cow that was now not in a very good condition. The natural luster and beauty had been destroyed. We can very much, this is very much a theme of the day. So here we are seeing the ecological answer of the Hare Krishna movement, really. And we should consider that. The cow and bull are our answer. It's not solar power. It's not wind power. When you want to deal with the ecological crisis, your first and foremost issue to deal with is energy. It's about the energy. And of course there are different solutions to energy. One is nuclear power, Kuber, and maybe we need another one, so they're saying, to avoid the load shedding. Right. So Vedic culture is not in favor of nuclear power plants. It's not very Vedic, and they cause a few complications with the radioactive waste, because besides the risk that these things can blow up and so on, the more immediate risk is that there is very toxic waste coming out of these nuclear plants, and lots of, actually, and they don't know what to do with it. So they're putting it here and there and everywhere in nature, and you're innocently walking around and getting some radiation. And your hairs fall out, and you start aging a little prematurely, and you wonder, what's happening at 50 year old? So, these things are going on. So this is not a way to maintain the earth, nor life on earth. One of the interesting points about the Vedic literature is that it describes life to beyond where we see it. Like, for example, it is said that mountains are living beings. We never really thought of mountains as living beings, at least not before Krishna consciousness. Right? And then it goes one step further and describes the entire earth as a living being. So this is another important point that we can present in our dialogue with the modern world. Something that's been overlooked, something that's never been thought of, that the earth is a living being. The earth is alive. And, earthquakes are possibly reflexes, right? As I would sort of start shaking if something was sucking my blood on my back, Try and shake it off. It may not be entirely in that way, but there is no doubt that we find that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the classical example of Hiranyaksha, who took essential minerals out of the earth in large quantities. What we are also doing, Hiranyaksha was going for the gold, and he was very expert, more expert than we are, and in mining, and as a result, he got the gold out very quick, and the earth lost its balance. So when we are taking gas out of the bottom, when we are taking oil, when we're taking out so many things, Prabhupada warns us that in this way we're upsetting the balance. Obviously, we require that motive goodness. Then spiritual life becomes effortless. Sometimes we are thinking, I'm struggling in my spiritual life. It is very difficult to execute this spiritual life. Thinking it's almost impossible, but we should understand that partially because the conditions on earth are so unfavorable, that is why spiritual life is difficult. we have created a society which competes with nature. The Roman poet Horatio said that what nature is so kind, you can chase her away with a pitchfork, but she always returns. So that is a fact. We see that nature strikes back. But modern man is in a model of war with the environment. Right? Throw poison on nature. Right? And things like this. So our life is in war. Also internally. Take a nuclear pill and bomb the bacteria. Right? It's like we just killed a few million. Right? Genocide. Right? You know, yeah, a few million have been mercilessly bombed. And yes, the as we take these kind of nuclear pills, we are shaking for a few days from the effect of the bombing. And then, you know, gradually the dust settles. So the war model in relation to the environment and in relation to nature is very relevant. So as I said, that our spiritual life stands on four legs, mind, body, and words, and the earth. And this is why we have to make arrangements to solve everything in the mode of goodness. Whatever we need has to be solved in the mode of goodness. Now, currently, that's not our first and foremost agenda. Currently, we're working in an emergency state, and we're using all the means of modern society, but temporarily. So don't get too attached to all these gadgets and all these machines, because they're... The future is that we're going to not only have load shedding, we're going to permanently turn off the electricity for good, once and for all. I mean, that's ultimately where this movement is heading. This is our agenda, actually. Yeah. Because, look, with bullock power, how much electricity are you going to have? And of course, the diehards may mount their computer on a bicycle, you know, and still pedal away to send off these last emails to the other guys who are pedaling and trying to receive it. But eventually, it becomes something like sending pigeons. You know what I mean? It's a hobby. I mean, it's no longer mainstream. No longer. I remember that. You know, like at one point, Mukunda Maharaj, he was the first one in ISKCON to talk about, like, computer communication. And we thought he was, like, somewhere far out, you know, somewhere, like, on his own cloud and really, like, not at all connected, you know, to the mainstream society. And now, wherever you look, people are sitting there. Yesterday we were walking and along the beach, and we saw, just like, first you saw a lady with an iPad, you know, iPad at sea. Then a few people like SMSing or whatever, doing with their phones. And that's the common thing. That's what everybody, if you have a moment, play with the phone or play with your gadget. But the actual system, if you have a moment, you know, where is the thing? Oh, yeah, here. Yeah. Where did I put it now? Ah, yes. The beat bag. Yeah. That's the idea. That's why when one beat bag in a particular country was hanging on the doorknob, Prabhupada was saying, "Whose beat bags are crying here?" And nobody answered. And they were actually the beat bag of the GBC. Somehow or other. Yeah? Of the local GBC, man. And Prabhupada said, "Whose beats are crying?" Because the beats are meant to be hanging around the neck. Yeah. Only not in the bath, but they're meant to be hanging around the neck so that if there's any moment, put the hand in there. Like that. So, large cultural changes are required to bring life back to a state where Krishna consciousness becomes very natural, more and more. This is what is required. We're cows. Cows are protected and provide the milk, where bulls are engaged in tilling the fields, in transport and everything. And it can be done. One interesting country in the world is Cuba, right? Because America was trying to control life at Cuba, since Cuba was quite close to America, and Fidel Castro, whatever he did, he embraced communism, that's one thing, but whatever he did, he stood up against America, right? Successfully, of course with the protection of communist countries, but he did it. But then there was an oil embargo on Cuba. So, no problem, right? Fidel Castro just moved everything back to animal transport, horse, cars, bullocks, everything. Yeah. And Cuba did fine. Cuba survived. Cuba did well. Life was going on fine. There was no problem. Right? So that was very interesting. I mean, we don't believe in that, of course, right now, you know, that it's possible. We have a few symbolic cows here and there in our movement, you know what I mean, as a token. Durban also has its token cows now, right? So that we can feel, yes, you know, we are a movement dedicated to cow protection. Da-da-da-da. You know, cow protection is Kongoshala. But we're not living in a society based on cow protection. It's not the fiber of our existence. But that's the way it has to go at one state. All right, we're not going to force the issue. There's no need for the leadership of this movement to twist the devotees' arms and force them, and thou shalt work on the land. No! Still, one hand still on the phone. Finally, you know, plowing the field with bullocks, mounting antennas on the horns of the bull, somehow or other, you know, download your mail by pulling the tail. We'll find a way to keep it going. Yeah? We're not going to stop. Die hard, you know, no way, right? We're not giving up yet. That spirit is deeply ingrained. So it's not that the management is going to force the change. Nature will force the change. As was said, the pitchfork drives nature out, Horatio said, but nature is so kind, it will come back. We can electronically try to drive nature out, but nature will come back. The BBC, and whatever the BBC says is very authorized, of course. You know, the BBC said that within the next 10 years, the bandwidth will be so overloaded that nothing will move. The internet will freeze. Traffic jam. It's true, there was a time when we used to drive, right? The old folks will remember, we used to drive from Durban to Maritzburg and Maritzburg to Durban, and no problem, right? You could just drive up and down anytime. Now, you know, you time it well, avoid the traffic, this, that, you know, it's like that. So ultimately, artificial arrangements cannot stand. There's no question. They can only exist temporary, but nature will strike back. And somehow or other, the natural limits will come. Srila Prabhupada gives an example. He says there was an artist, he wanted to make a statue of Lord Shiva, but the statue didn't look so much look like Lord Shiva, it looked more like a monkey. He said, in the name of world peace, Mother and Man has made a nuclear bomb. We need this nuclear bomb to maintain the peace. If we don't make it, you know what I mean? How can we protect ourselves from war? Therefore, we're making this weapon, not to destroy the world, but to protect ourselves from war. So, actually, we're making it, you know, in the name of world peace, the Prophet says. And then, so, he said, you know, you try to make a statue of Lord Shiva, but you've made a monkey, right? Yes. What kind of peace is this, right? When you are creating like such horrible weapons. So he said, like, so the scientists are making so many arrangements to avoid death and to extend the duration of life, but ultimately modern science have put this impending death like the sword of Damocles hanging over our head. The sword on a string, hanging over the head. It's an old Greek fable. It's a sword on a string, hanging from the ceiling. How does it feel? But this is what we do. I remember when I first started traveling in India in the early 70s, that at that time, everywhere life was very simple. You'd see the bullocks, and you'd see in the fields, you see little temples dedicated to different deities, and you'd see the people were worshipping. And the growing of grains was very closely connected to worship. It wasn't just like, oh my God, are we all going to become farmers? It's difficult. In the mid-80s in India, my health went down, and they sent me for 1 year to a farm just so that in Australia to pick up my health. So there I was on this farm, and I was with devotees who would talk day and night about cauliflowers. And, you know, and the greatest ecstasy was the size of the cauliflower. And like in my mind, you know, it's like I said, look, you know, whether you have one big cauliflower or two small cauliflowers, you're going to have the same sabji. So what's the point, you know? The size of the cauliflower. I mean, what do we care, you know? You know what I mean? I care about the sabji, not about the size of the cauliflower. As long as I get my sabji, I'm okay, you know. Anyway, and I was thinking, are we going to talk about Krishna? But it's not a fact that if we go back to the land, that it will be that we just talk about cauliflowers. No, we'll talk about Krishna. We'll worship Krishna everywhere. We will worship Krishna before we plant. We worship Krishna at the time of the harvest. We offer everything to Krishna. We'll follow Krishna's systems because we'll base things on nature. See, now we base things on chemicals. That means our own strength. So plant any time and just throw some fertilizer on top. No problem. But in nature, actually, vegetables and plants depend on the moon. Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that, or no, it was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta who is pointing out. He says, like, at the time when the moon, as the moon is getting more and more full, it is drawing out all the liquid. It attracts all the water. All the water is attracted by the moon. And therefore, plants, right, which depend on water very much, right, as their only, as their principal sustenance, they depend very much on the moon, very much on the moon. It is said, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also gives an explanation of Ekadasi, and he explains that it has to do with the liquid in the moon, and that at one point there's too much liquid building up in the body, right? Due to the moon, it brings all the liquid to the forefront. Then the digestion of grains becomes very difficult. Therefore, on the Ekadasi. Somehow I read that the other day. Very scientific. So, in this way, what can we say? The Vedic culture, because it is apurusheya, it is not coming from man. It is the avaroha panta, not the aroha panta. It is the descending path, not the ascending path. Avaroha panta, descending path. Aroha panta, ascending path, right? Where man reaches out to uncover the truth. Man reaches out to God. Man reaches out to the universe. But through the Vedic literature, the Supreme Lord reaches out to man. And then everything becomes clear. So then we understand much more intricately. So we need that society. But that takes tremendous courage, which we don't have, because it makes drastic changes in our life. And how is that possible? You know, we depend on all these things. So many things we depend on. But as I said, therefore, it will not be possible by twisting people's arms. We'll find ways to somehow or other go on. But the electricity is off. It's temporarily back on. I heard that the reason is that soon there's going to be a hike of the energy prices. You got to start paying more for electricity. So who in South Africa will pay more for electricity if you have so much load shedding? Therefore, they've temporarily turned off the load shedding, and then they'll push through the price hike, and then the load shedding will start again. That's the idea. Just that you... possibly, that might be what's behind it, so I've heard. So it's all forgotten now. Huh? It's all forgotten now, load shedding. We don't think about it anymore. But it's just a little pause, a little break, a breather, before it hits us again. And not to go. We've all heard that's not just going to go away. It rather looks like a permanent feature of the new South African lifestyle. I mean, and what's next? How much further will it go until it gets to the point where ultimately bullocks become valuable and the tractor will stand there, you know? And like just like the residents of Vrindavan, we're still having the skeleton of Agasura, right, in Vrindavan, and the cowherd boys used to play with it. In the same way, these monster tractors will stand there, you know, some flowers growing out of the tank, and we will play. Children will play with the tractors, you know. It's like the big demons of the past. An old man, you know, instead of sitting too much and instead of jogging, right, they'll be there, you know, on the fields behind the bullocks. Right? Yeah. Well, you know, telling the young men how to do it, you know. When we were young, yeah. Old men, they know everything. And what they don't know, the old ladies know. So, what can I say? Anyway, the point of this lecture, to bring it to a conclusion, is that to turn towards the earth is not materialistic. But at every state, we have to see how the earth is connected to Krishna. And at every state, always connect things to Krishna by offering them to Krishna, by following the order that Krishna has made. As I say, there's a time to plant, there's a time to harvest, and all these things. And then, if we follow that order and we worship the various agents, then nature will also behave properly. It will rain at the right time, not at the wrong time. Like nowadays, they say the rain is so irregular, it's very difficult to plow with bulls. Said because now it rains, and then now you got to get your crop in, so you just like race in there with your tractor when you have like two, three dry days, and it's like, and then I plant everything real quick. You know, it's like, okay, it's in. See, farming with bullocks is a big problem, so they say. Of course, somewhere along the line, it is up to our movement to prove people wrong. Nowadays, a lot of devotees are saying that you can no longer preach directly. You know, that in the time when Prabhupada was there, it was different because he just came at the time when all the young people were tired of material life and were very interested in spiritual life. And that's true. They were. Right? And so Prabhupada, it was very easy in that way to present Krishna consciousness directly. But now, and in those days, you found high-class people on the street, right? Because they were renouncing everything. But now, they say you find only bums on the street. And, you know, to get to the more high-class people is more difficult. You just can't so easily approach everyone. Now, they say we need an indirect approach, and therefore we're going to the yoga crowd. Yes, bridge preaching. And, you know, and stretch your arms and bend your legs and tip, you know, and the tip on the nose on your toes and all these kind of things. You know, yoga. Yoga is in the Hare Krishna movement. We're all doing yoga preaching, you know. It's like in the uni programs, 1 week yoga, 1 week philosophy. It's like, it's standard now, you know. This is what you do. Yoga is the only way to go. Without yoga, how can you preach? It's not possible, you know. I mean, you don't use yoga in your preaching. Don't you know that when you distribute books, you first do some yoga on the street? And then, you know, then you give the book. It's the only way it works. Everybody knows, right? And meanwhile, we're presenting ourselves as yogis, you know, and as hatha yogis. Yeah, we do a bit of hatha yoga to impress people. But I don't like it because it's not our own identity. We take an artificial identity. Now, it's allowed, you know, it's allowed. If you have to put a false mustache and a wig, you know what I mean? I mean, to impress people, all right, go ahead, you know. Might look cool. And, you know, and if it produces results, go for it, you know, in your preaching. We can disguise. But still, it's nicer if we can just preach the way we are. Well, another identity which is very cutting edge in the world of today is the environment edge. Right? Everyone is the environment. It's the new religion. Right? I mean, you know, you can blaspheme God anytime, but you know, if you dare to throw some garbage on the earth and other people see it, you know, have you tried to throw, it's like I once threw an apple core. It's organic, you know what I mean? It breaks down. You know, I threw it out of the window of the car, and the car behind me started honking. It's like, I mean, maha apparat, you know. This is very great offense. You know, you're polluting the earth. So, what if we have, if we come in an ecological identity? This is not a dramatic performance. This is not Hare Krishna is dressing up for the occasion, you know, to impress the audience, and then behind it, there is another Hare Krishna, as with Hatha Yoga, right? We don't care about Hatha Yoga, you know. We think it's hogwash, actually, to tell you the truth, right? You know, yeah. It's not required, as Srila Prabhupada would say. But an ecological way of life is only gain. It's not only gain in our preaching, but it's also gain for ourselves. And that's what people want to see from us. They're dying to see it from us. But where are the heroes? Therefore, I always say, there are three frontiers in the world where really one can still do some great pioneering work. Just like in the early 60s and 70s, you know, people were going forward into new places and establishing this movement. It was such an exciting time, you know what I mean? It's like you really felt like, you know, you're changing the world, and now it's a different phase of the movement. It's the maintenance phase of the movement, and we have to look after what we have, and there's committees for everything, and, you know, and meetings and minutes and like and all these things. I mean, it's another era now. But no, there are still three frontiers where pioneering can be done. One is China, right? Over 1 billion people. Right? So much to do. There's China. If you want to pioneer, there is China. Yeah. Okay. You go, yeah, but... you know, China, you know what I mean? You know, I don't know, the dragon and all that, you know, it's like... Any other options? Yes. There is another frontier. A second frontier. What's that? What is it? Africa. Go to Africa. We're already in Africa. I mean, we're already in Africa. Oh, but that's amazing. Then you are the people. You are the people that can make the change. Yes, in Africa. So much to do. In South Africa, we have Krishna consciousness in Durban, Johannesburg, Cape Town, Port Elizabeth. We have one man in George, right? Bloom, I have bad news, the center is closing. We have a few Namahattas, you know, there is something in Kimberley, there are some people in Nelsprout, if you really look, you know what I mean? I mean, if you really search, but then, you know, right, then the rest is untouched. It's a gold mine, South Africa, gold mine. There are diamonds out there. Gold mine, diamonds, yes. You know, there are diamonds out there, and all we have to do is pick them up. We have hardly scratched the surface, even of South Africa. We haven't even been there. Have we ever been in all these places? Yeah. How far did we ever go out of Durban?
I remember that 17 years ago we made an excursion to the Drakensberg.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's so much pioneering to do. So two fronts I mentioned already now. I mentioned China, I mentioned Africa,
books in every nook and corner of Africa, because the African people want to read. They want to read. You give them a book, they don't throw it away. They read it. They read it. Okay, two fronts I've mentioned. What is the third front? It is God. It's the farms. It's the land. To go back to the land. These are the three areas where we can still do some pioneering. Right. Besides the fourth one, preaching on the moon, but you know. We have a few spaced out devotees. And they're taking care of that department. But you know, going back to the land, and who will do it? Yeah, well, the grandchildren or the great-grandchildren, maybe. Yeah. But meanwhile, the world, they want to see something in the ecological sphere. And if we have solutions, they will listen to us. We can be authorities in the world. And we have something real to offer. We have a real program, a real agenda. And if we live it and present it, and we show the combination of Brahminical culture and cow protection with Krishna in the center, then things are right. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha Jagatitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. We worship Govinda, the Supreme Lord, by protecting the cow and bull and by protecting Brahminical culture. And this combination of Krishna in the center, protecting cow and bull and Brahminical culture, that will do it. That's the new formula for the world. Cutting edge, man. It's the coolest thing. It's the latest of the latest. We're with it. I was sitting next to this Christian preacher on a row of three on the plane, and he was showing to somebody next to him, a younger person, you know, who he was brainwashing, and he was brainwashing him while I was watching, and he had a PowerPoint with like many, many slides, and as he's clicking away, that it's about missionary activity and preaching. And once, and different slides come up, all made in America, of course, by these American preachers. And one slide, I still remember one slide. One slide said, if we don't provide answers to questions that are relevant to the world, then how can our preaching be successful? The Hare Krishna movement is like, you know, has no time for these things. We're too busy because we have so many programs, and you know, and it's like from Monday to Friday there are Namahata Bhakti Rikshas and like, you know, South Coast pizza and this and that, and you know, it's just like, who thinks of these things? We're just busy. We're really busy. Chanting 16 minutes. It's a lot of work. It takes a lot of time. So in this way, our three frontiers, they are lying, well, shall I say, neglected. Africa's a continent. Who's taking it on? Are we taking it on? Systematically? You know, I used to come in the heydays of Sankirtan, right? When ISKCON was really like pumping, you know. I remember in Melbourne there was the headquarters, the room, the Sankirtan coordination office, and you'd come in and on the wall there was a map of Melbourne, right? And like a huge one, a whole wall covered with the map of Melbourne. And then, you know, and there was the Sankirtan leader, and systematically they were assigning people to different areas, and they were keeping records of what was done, right?
It was all like kept and tracked and so on. And like, you know, and they were following up. They were seeing, okay, we haven't been in this area for 4 months. We should go again. There's like cards were in the books. You know, people would send them back, right? And they would follow up. You know, it's like it was a very kind of well-oiled machine. Do we have something for that, like that for Africa, something for South Africa, something for, you know, Durban, something for Chatsworth, something for, right, like, you know. Okay, enough is enough. Thank you. Now, some reactions, some comments, questions. I'm most welcome.
I did come in a little late, so I missed that class. Thank you so much. The more I listen to you, the more and more I'm realizing your phenomenal realizations also. I wanted to ask you, you're traveling in Hungary. They have a model farm. It's the government actually recognizing as they want to actually imitate their model. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Certainly we can take elements of that model. And I think that what Chief Ramaraj is doing is based on what Srila Prabhupada started, when he started like New Vrindavan. Prabhupada started this idea that you could invoke the presence of the Holy Dham by simply by worshipping, by creating the places and worshipping Krishna. And that Krishna then would manifest himself in these places, and that then it would become as good as the Dham. So with that faith, on that principle which Prabhupada established, Shiv Ramaraj went to work, and he started to recreate the Dham. And thus he creates a place based on spiritual culture, and that is the essence. Like, that's what I meant. Like, the combination of protecting bulls and cows, or of having milk and so on, and having agriculture in a ecological way, next to that strong Brahminical culture. It's that strong Brahminical culture that glues the whole thing together. Otherwise, it won't work. Yeah. Hungary had some help, you know, financially, from the UK, because there were two swamis connected with strong connections with the UK. One was our Shiv Ramaraj, the other was Puri Maharaj. So they were like very involved in the founding era of it. So financing is an issue, and as in that way, as a model for the world, Nuvrajadam may not be a perfect easy model to copy. But I think the principle of invoking the Dham is what Prabhupada started. It weren't just names, you know, New Jagannath Puri, you know what I mean, New Mayapur. Oh, nice name. Yeah, amazing. Such a nice... No, it was the whole... Prabhupada was much more serious. Invoke the presence of the Dham in these places. And Shiv Ramaraj is like so serious about that, right? That he wrote his like six-part book about that, you know what I mean? And each place is there to be found in Nuvrajadam, and the stories and the whole culture is there, and people are gradually getting absorbed in that. And then it works, you know, because then material desires start to diminish, then simple living becomes something we can accept. Hungary, of course, was a country where when Shiv Ramaraj came in, he came in at a strategic time, because this was before they joined the EU, And before all these countries joined the EU, there was a huge difference. To join the EU, these countries had to do many things. They had to upgrade their roads, you know, they had to allow certain foreign shopping chains in and so on. And you saw all the standard, like, you know, shopping areas began to develop, which were all not there. When I first started to go to those kind of countries, you saw that people were, you know, going with their horse and cart and were just going to the side of the road, and manually they were cutting the grass at the side of the road to feed the animals. I mean, now, you know, those days are gone, right? Now in those countries, they've modernized quickly, the economy has changed, and so on. A lot of the heavy industry started going there initially. The reason why all these countries were let in the EU was because the Western Europe, no one wanted to do heavy industry anymore. Everyone wanted to work in an office with a computer. So therefore they needed the... So all the Westerners started to put their factories in the East Bloc and get cheap labor. They were ready to do the heavy work. And that went really well until China started to spoil the game and started to come in with lower markets. And then all these companies pulled out, Toyota and everyone pulled out really quick out of the... closed down their establishments really fast. And those who were too late, they went down. So we can see that the Hungary project, by Krishna's mercy, and just came up at the right time and sort of grew on the wave. You know, so in other words, when we start such kind of projects, we need to also consider the local dynamics of the particular economy and political environment that we are in. Looking at South Africa like that, you know, as soon as you say farms, you say hot potato, right? Farms. Okay, you know, I had a nice program on the Go Shala, by the way, the other day, but one thing I didn't notice as I was going out was that the electric fence goes all the way down to the ground. And it was dark, and as I walked down, I just brushed it. I always wondered how much current there was on an electric fence. It's impressive. It was. It's a good jolt. Well, you know. But that's the other side of things, you know. You want something like that. So, challenges are there, and we have to see how to tackle it and how to deal with that. And how we're ultimately going to create our communities. And but it is needed. We need to develop rural communities in Africa. We saw the Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj started things like cottage industries and these kind of things in Nigeria. And we need to start communities. For local people, based on the land, with all these, with cottage industry and Brahminical culture, strong Brahminical culture, then it can be successful. Just like Prabhupada went to live with the hippies on the Lower East Side, then they changed. Otherwise, they would not have made the change. Shivram Maharaj is basically residing there and on the strength of his Krishna consciousness revealing the whole transcendental vision of the Dharma and invoking the presence of the Dharma, and then people can grow into it. So it takes many spiritual leaders to lead such things. Therefore it takes a very strong Brahminical culture who will teach in these projects to make it work. Who will be the Brahmins? Who, oh who? They have to be pure. And they have to be knowledgeable. They have to be oceans of knowledge.
And what is the class you gave today, while it is based on Srimad Bhagavatam, and the presentations you made, dotted with the humor, could be very easily spoken in an ecological forum of other people. Have you personally been involved where you presented something like this?
Yeah, sometimes I speak in these kind of forums. Yeah, my point was is that the yoga identity became a big fashion, but the problem is that with the yoga identity we are posing, right, to be more interested in hatha yoga than we really are. It is like an artificial adjustment we make to kind of bring bhakti yoga in, and it is part of yoga, but we put a little bit more interest in hatha yoga than we actually have. If we go with the ecology identity, we can 100% be ourselves and stand up for that. Therefore, I think it is equally attractive to the world at large, but I think it's a much better identity. So for 8 years I was involved in the Spanish farm development, and I finally withdrew from that farm for various reasons. The farm had a lot of history. That was difficult because of the history. There were a lot of people who were fixed in their ways. The other thing was, though, we started in a separate valley, 40 hectares, which is, it's 100 acres. A valley of 40 hectares. We started an eco-village. It had its own entrance, its own water. It was a whole separate thing. And I had also a very good man for that, who was like Brahminical and at the same time knew a lot about alternative biological farming and so on, and who was ready to teach it. So when he was there, the eco-village was flourishing, and we were using it as an identity to preach. And unfortunately, there were family problems in his life, right, which caused him to withdraw from the project. And then after, I didn't have a leader anymore, and gradually some more low-class elements came in, some drugs came in, some hashis and things, and I could see, it's going to be a hippie thing if it goes on like this. It's like without a leader, it won't make it. So these kind of communities can work, if we have strong spiritual leaders. And it's a very good platform for us to speak from. And the more we do in the field, the more we'll be cutting edge. The more we'll actually have the interest of so many people. And it's not going away. It's not a fashion, because the situation is not getting better in the world, it's getting worse. Therefore the need is getting greater. So, it's a lasting angle that we have where we can, instead of being like outlandish and sort of strange, we can, people, we can be very relevant. So we should enter into this. Anyway, I set my peace. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.